we're the first city that said, we're going to make our mark. We're going to grow our community. We're going to make our name. We're going to create jobs and economic prosperity for everybody on amateur sports.
I'm Blaine.
This is Jeff.
And this is Hidden Indy, the podcast that tells you the story of how Indianapolis came to be through stories you probably haven't heard.
On this episode, you'll hear from John Merlin, Sandy Knapp, Allison Melangdon, and Ted Bone.
Welcome to Hidden Indy. I'm Blaine.
This is Jeff.
Today we're talking about the AAU disbanding, getting some new industries here in Indianapolis, and starting the Sports Corporation, which really kind of was the beginning of our sports strategy. So episode one, you may remember, we've kind of set up where we're coming from, what we're going to be talking about over the next few episodes, and you know, the foundation of wanting to improve downtown, improve the city center. UNIGOV happens, and then we build our big university here. We focus on our two main things, which are building up the city center, having the university, and really, you know, making this an attractive place for people to move. And what we're going to talk about today is some stuff that happened outside of Indianapolis that ended up falling to our lap that kind of shifted our strategy a little bit. So up until 1978, all amateur sports were run by the Amateur Athletic Union, or the AAU. Mm-hmm. Most people now really only know the AAU because of basketball.
Youth basketball.
Yeah. Right, yeah. I mean, that's the way that you hear it the most. You usually still don't hear it in a super positive light. Right. It's usually, you know, AAU coaches are funneling money to colleges to make sure they get their players and all sorts of stuff like that. Well, back in up till 78, the AAU was the Olympic Committee, essentially.
Right. All of the sports.
Yeah. So all the sports were funneled through the AAU, and you had to jump through these ridiculous hoops to stay in quote-unquote amateur to be able to participate in the Olympics. So this was before, you know, the dream teams where you'd have Michael Jordan and Larry Bird playing in the Olympics. We would have college players playing basketball in the Olympics. All of the track athletes were all quote-unquote amateurs. They weren't allowed to make money, and it was one of those things where they weren't only not allowed to make money, they were making like ridiculously small amounts of money to live off of. It was like $3 a day.
That's a decent stipend.
Even with inflation, it's not a whole lot.
Maybe in like the 1700s.
Yeah, that was right. A decent. Yeah. Yeah. Before the Olympics even came back.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was kind of a rumbling going on in the 60s, and one of my heroes was one of the reasons that the AAU toppled. So any runner,
and not just one of the
he was probably
huge reason, right?
Yeah, one of the probably two to three big reasons why we got rid of the AAU.
Right.
So any runner knows who Steve Prefontaine is. They're probably pretty big fans of Steve Prefontaine.
Or mustache fans.
Yeah, any mustache fans, yeah. If you don't know who Steve Prefontaine is, he was the very first Nike athlete. He was a runner at the University of Oregon, went to the 1972 Olympic Games in Munich, which were famous for the Israeli hostage crisis. Placed fourth in the 5,000 meters, was very, very vocal about being against the AAU. So his big rivals back then were Finland, Laseviren, and the AAU essentially was like, you're not going to go run against your rivals, you're not going to get better, you're not going to get race them, because you're going to go where I tell you to go. And they would make these massive sums of money taking Steve Prefontaine and Frank Shorter and these other people. Nobody that's listening knows who they are. They would make massive sums of money taking these,
promoting them.
Yeah. The athletes were getting $3 a day, staying like five to a room in a crappy like Motel 6.
Nothing against Motel 6.
Yeah. And so Prefontaine was really vocal about, hey, this is garbage. I won't right. use the language he used. he wasn't a fan. We'll say that.
Yeah, I mean, they were exploiting these like really, really great athletes to make a buck for their own, yeah.
Exactly. Fill their own pockets, yeah. So while the head of the AAU and, you know, the executives were making tons of money, the athletes were making nothing or pennies. It's probably virtually an argument nothing. That yeah. you're hearing right now about some other organizations, but
but they got the chance to run.
Yeah, that's what it was. You yeah. get the chance to represent your country in the right. Olympics, and you know, they were getting money thrown at them like, hey, do you want to come pay, or I'll pay you $2,000 to come run this race, or I'll pay $5,000 to come run these five races or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So
the argument against, like, you get the opportunity to do this is the only way you're good at the Olympics is if you can make that your full-time job. Like, you need to be training, running, whatever, that, like, that's your life. That's 8 hours a day. So you can't have a living and be in this organization that doesn't support you.
Yeah, and after the 72 Olympics, Pre went back and did his senior year, but then he, you know, quote-unquote went pro. I said quote-unquote a lot so far. I'll stop.
Well, they can't see you doing the air quotes here.
That's true. So he was literally living in a trailer park, in a trailer, bartending to make a living. And he ended up, you know, in 74 working for Nike for a little while, but he was literally just like, they paid him a very small amount of money, like the right. maximum he was allowed to be paid to be an employee, and he was technically like a salesman or something like that. And that was the way that they could kind of put under the table money towards sure. him. But at the same time, he's competing against people from other countries, especially some of the European or Russian countries that are, we'll say, state-sponsored, mm-hmm. Where they get this cushy you know, government job where they don't really do anything but train, but they're like, you know, like a police chief somewhere.
Right. Where, like, not only does the country take it extremely serious, but they're funding you. I mean, whatever way they have to.
They were able to keep them amateur status because they had full-time jobs as mm-hmm. government employees, but those jobs were to train.
Right.
So,
like, the landscape there, I mean, these are our national heroes. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, this, like, Olympic sports, with all the pro sports we have today, I don't think, you know, they make the news every 4 years, but, like, back in this day, every year, every event was huge.
It was still a really big deal, yeah.
Right.
And, well, and also you only had four channels, so you only had a couple options of what you could see, and it was right. the Olympics. So.
Right.
So, like many, you know, different important bills or laws or anything that's passed throughout the years, unfortunately, it had to take some hero to die young, and then you could kind of champion that through to pass a law. So in 75 or 76, C. Prefontaine died in a car wreck, 1975, died in a car wreck, wasn't able to compete in the 76 Olympics in Montreal, and so people really kind of used him to champion getting rid of the AAU. So they really started kind of pushing the government. The other side of this was in the 76 Montreal Olympics, we had a really terrible showing. And like Eastern Germany mopped the floor with us in the medal count. Russia mopped the floor with us in the medal count. Now we knew, you know, we kind of knew they were doping and they had the state-sponsored doping ring going, but we couldn't really prove it and we couldn't really do anything better, right? So we used two sides of this coin, which was, hey, we need to let good old capitalism rise. We can't have a state-funded, you know, Olympic committee. We got to let capitalism run this. We got to do it on the private sector. And in the name of Steve Prefontaine, we've got to stop allowing the AAU to take advantage of these athletes.
Right.
So we kind of looked at it as we need to be able to let individual sports govern themselves, and they can figure out how to get their athletes paid uniquely to keep their amateur status.
Sure.
But they put this pretty little bow on it of saying, no, we're doing this for the athlete. We're making sure the athlete's taken care of. We're getting rid of the AAU, and we're going to make sure each sport is governed by itself and governs its athletes as it sees fit.
Mm-hmm.
So important question you're all probably asking yourself is, how does Indianapolis fit into this?
Yeah, why do we care?
Yep. So at this point, we saw an opportunity.
We had the luck of the Amateur Sports Act coming along in 1978, which basically just created the need for 37 new, nice, pollution-free industries that were going to be the governing bodies for each of the Olympic sports, which had heretofore been run by a few organizations like the AAU that were the, if you will, the International or Olympic Committee franchisee for the U.S. for maybe 20 sports, I think. So here's going to be a group that's going to have a board of directors of generally influential people in, from various walks of life around the country. They had to have a headquarters someplace. Why not go for Indianapolis?
The AAU actually was located here in Indianapolis at the time, and mm-hmm. we said, well, if you're going to disband and you're going to create individual sports entities, why don't we go after some of these? So at the time...
39.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It created 39 new, what a lot of folks here viewed it, and the way they spun it is pollution-free industries.
Right.
And we said, which ones can we get to stay here? Which ones can we get to headquarter here in Indianapolis? And at the time, we got six.
Basically, there all those were going to be new businesses that had to be created almost overnight, which, again, the group around the table recognized if all these groups are going to have to become autonomous, they're going to have to locate someplace. My name is Sandy Knapp. And I worked for the Indiana Pacers for close to 10 years before I, frankly, got, quote, discovered by the group that were in the process of forming the Indiana Sports Corporation. And I was lucky enough to get hired as their first employee.
And they were... We were going out to different cities, especially Colorado Springs, where a lot of the Olympic training facilities are held, and recruiting people.
Right. Well, I mean, we don't necessarily have a leg up when it comes to training. Like, we're not where people think, like, oh, I'm going to, you know, run in the mountains, or I'm going to train in altitude, or I'm going to do all these things. Like, yeah, I mean, we're not necessarily what people think of right away when they think of world-class training facilities. So we sought to change that.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, like, one of the people that we recruited from Colorado Springs is somebody you're going to hear a lot in the next few episodes, Allison Melangdon. You know, Allison was a... she worked for USA Gymnastics at the time. USA Gymnastics was moving here to Indianapolis.
I never thought I would leave Colorado. I loved living there. I loved my job. I loved my friends and, you know, the great life I had built there. I went to college there. And but the way that Sandy described the impact that they were trying to have, and the new president of USA Gymnastics was a real energetic guy, Mike Jackie. He was excited, and he I thought he could be a great leader to follow and learn from. And he was just relocating to Indianapolis, and it just sounded like a huge adventure. So I said, all right, I'm going to leave the Rocky Mountains. And I put an ad in the Indianapolis Star for a roommate, and had somebody call me. And who does that? I don't know. I put this ad in. I had a lovely young woman call me and say, I just graduated from IU and I took a job in Indianapolis and I'm looking for a roommate. We had about a 3-minute phone conversation. And I said, okay, let's live together. You know, there's no internet then, no phones, no anything. So I talked to her for 3 minutes and said, okay, let's live together. And then I never talked to her again. She found an apartment, mailed me an address and a key. And I drove across the country by myself. The Rocky Mountains were in my rearview mirror as I was leaving Colorado. And I kept thinking, I hope I'm making a good decision here. Got here in the middle of the night, used the key, it worked. And she had a little sticky note on my door that said, your room. And I went in there and got my sleeping bag out and woke up the next morning, introduced myself to her. Allison Melangdon, I'm the Senior Vice President of Events for Hillman Motorsports.
And she decided she was going to come on a whim. You know, she'd never been here. She lived in Colorado Springs. didn't grow up here, made a phone call to a random ad in the Indy Star for a roommate, drove across the country, picked up her key, and moved in.
Because this is pre-Craigslist, yeah. So you gotta...
She ended up working for USA Gymnastics for a long time, and she kind of came with, the other sports that were moving here.
A number of the NGBs that were moving to Indianapolis had jobs open up because they were in states where people wanted to stay where they were. They decided not to move to Indiana. And so a number of the NGBs that sort of moved at the same time, gymnastics, diving, canoe, kayak, I believe, synchronized swimming, rowing, as they were all moving here, they had different job openings for folks.
Now, what we have now is USA Diving. We still have gymnastics.
Synchronized swimming,
and USA Track and Field mm-hmm. is still here. If you're familiar with downtown, they're all pretty similarly co-located. They're all pretty close to the circle. So we still have four of those. But what happened at that point is we really took a left turn as far as our downtown strategy and started thinking a little bit outside the box of how we can grow Indianapolis and really put it on the map. So we took this idea, and as we talked last episode, we really wanted to figure out how to improve the city center, make downtown more exciting, make downtown more of a destination. Mm-hmm. And these groups that we had talked about last episode that had been meeting, the city committee and those guys that were just kind of getting together and chatting and figuring things out, they were like, hey, we've got at the time six sports that are here. Why don't we just create a nonprofit that's not like the governor of those sports, but it's going to run the events. It's going to try to attract other events to come to Indy. It's going to work really closely with these new amateur sports to make Indianapolis a destination for sports to be hosted.
Right. It's the promotional arm of sports.
Exactly.
Right. Like you've got the structure and training and all that happens. That is very like governing body, takes care of all of that. But then, yeah, you have to jazz it up, for lack of a better term. You have to promote it. And yeah, that's what the Sports Corp set out to do.
So the Sports Corp was formed. They needed people to run it. And you'll hear a lot of these people, I think four or five of the people we interviewed for this whole story were all
at some point or another.
Yeah. At some point present in the Sports Corp. Some of these I'll kind of intersplice here with some of the stories and some of the clips that we have. But, Sandy Knapp, one of the first presidents, if not the first president of the Sports Corp. She was a Pacers cheerleader. She worked for the Pacers for a long time. She wanted to get involved, kind of came over, was like employee one.
Mike Carroll, Mike Browning got together and said, we want an organization of some type to incorporate, to manage this business and help us move it forward. They picked Sandy to be the first executive director. And so she led that organization from 79 when it started till about 91 when she retired.
Mm-hmm. Allison Melingdon ended up becoming a president of the Sports Corp. Ted Bohm, a name that you're going to hear a whole lot. I think you probably already heard him a little bit in episode one, president of the Sports Corp. One of the stories I think that's most interesting is Jack Swarbrick. For those of you that are Notre Dame fans, that name probably sounds familiar. He's the athletic director at Notre Dame now.
You take someone like Jack Swarbrick. Jack is the current athletic director at Notre Dame, undoubtedly one of the key successful athletic directors in the country. Great job. He started in Indianapolis in 1981 or 82 by raising his hand saying, let me volunteer to coordinate team handball because nobody else wanted to for the National Sports Festival. So you have a guy who's not associated with sports, who's a young lawyer at Fagery, Baker & Daniels. Ted Bohm was a senior partner there, and he went to the young attorneys and said, does anybody here want to help volunteer and organize a sport that we don't know a lot about, but we're going to get smart at? Team handball. Jack raised his hand and said, I'll do it.
But, as Allison said, way back when he was just a lawyer,
right.
He raised his hand for team handball, ended up working for the Sports Corp, becoming president, and becoming the president or the athletic director in Notre Dame. Like, is that not like the success? That's the American dream, right?
Right. And this is before you could Google team handball.
Right.
Like, yeah. You had to go probably to the library. figure out what the heck he signed up for.
He was a lawyer. He probably had an Encyclopedia Britannica. That's right. Yeah, he probably like bought one from a guy.
Right, he had the whole set.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, he had to completely learn a sport.
Yeah.
And so but that's really where kind of our story kind of catapults, right? So we had this idea to build up downtown and make it better and bring people downtown and get more people to live here and shop here and eat here and work here, but everybody downtown has that.
Right, everyone wants that.
Yeah, Louisville has that.
Yeah.
They're like 10 steps below us. Like, nothing against Louisville, but right. Like, they have the one event. Like, we could have been Louisville. We could have been Louisville with just the Speedway, just the 500,
because mm-hmm.
that's what they are. They're Louisville. They have a pretty cool downtown. It's fairly similar to ours. They've got the horse racing, and that's it. They yep. never were able to get that other industry that really...
Well, and they've got a similar problem to us that, like, their downtown and their horse racing track is not necessarily... I mean, they're close, but it's not one and the same.
Yeah. I think... Isn't theirs further, though?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, when you go to Speedway...
Yeah.
You're not downtown.
That's true.
You're and we're close, trying though. To get people downtown.
Right? Yeah. So we saw this opportunity. We do want to reiterate, like, the whole, this was not a pointed, like, we're going to go make sure the AAU gets disbanded and then right. get some sports here and then build this organization there. And right. then make Indianapolis the amateur sports capital of the world. It
kind of snowballed. I mean, it was like.
We were just maybe the first ones to recognize what all those dots, if they got connected, what they would mean.
Yeah, this happened. The AAU disbanded.
Mm-hmm.
This is an opportunity for us. What should we do about it? We got a handful of sports, and then how can we then take that to the next level and then start hosting events? And I gotta say, like, anyone we talked to, Sandy Knapp made that happen. Like, we got so lucky that she started that thing, because who knows, like, alternate reality, like, who knows if that was someone else, you know, where this would have led to, you know?
Yeah, and she didn't even want to live here.
Right.
I mean, you know, we'll let her tell it, but when she graduated from IU, this is not where she wanted to go.
I graduated from IU in 1967, and the last place I wanted to get a good job offer from was in Indianapolis. I wanted to go somewhere else.
So, yeah, I mean, without Sandy, like, you know, you can really argue that none of this happens. And it's interesting that one of the things we talked about when we were talking to John Merlin, the fact that we even started to take the approach of trying to build a city around amateur sports or use amateur sports as a driver, there's definitely people out there that are detractors to that theory.
Sure.
You know, this Mark Rosentraub fella being the main one.
Almost immediately, Mark Rosentraub came out with all these studies that said that amateur sports and professional sports alike were not the ways, that's not the way to do economic development. And he still does it. He still writes about it.
Although I think his biggest point is probably professional sports.
Yeah, but I mean, he specifically calls out amateur sports when he's doing that. And it's, I mean, it's an interesting concept. I'm sure that, you know, that dude's probably made a ton of money, and he's, you know, he's a professor at Michigan now. Yeah. Like, awesome, good for you. You were able to do that on one you know, theory, but we've kind of proven your theory wrong.
Well, and so here's the other thing I'll say, cuz he's not smart. He did some work to come up with that. So, we obviously put all of the pieces in place to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably examples of cities that didn't do it as well, that didn't put the city behind it or the money behind it, whatever it needed to be that we did, that have failed at trying to do this.
Well, and that's a pretty good segue, that we were the first ones that tried.
Right.
There was no sports corporation before Indianapolis.
Right.
The Sports Corp started in 1979, and it was the first of its kind organization in the country. And it started an industry, because now there's over 500 sports commissions in the country. And this was the first one. And it is a key reason why Indianapolis has had these events over and over again. Every major event we've attracted since 1979 is 100% due to the efforts of the Sports Corporation.
We were the first one, and now there's, you know, that thousands across the country that have tried to sprout up because of us and used us as a model. So maybe we are the anomaly to sure. his theory, because we, from the jump, built something from the ground up and made it work, and everybody else has just been trying to copy us, and it's not quite as successful.
Right. I mean, that no one's built a better mousetrap. We built it, and no one's been able to beat us at our own game.
Yeah, like, are we ever going to host an Olympic Games? Like, probably not.
Right.
Like, that's more suited for a city like LA, where they have more infrastructure, more stuff to do. I mean, they have
15 stadiums. I'm not 100% convinced we would go after one either.
No, I don't think it's not in our wheelhouse.
Right.
But, I mean,
we know what we do well. We know how to make it work.
Yeah, yeah. We've built from you know, we're kind of straying off the path right now, but we've built from the AAU disbanding and deciding we should have a sports corp over these five or six organizations that are here, to here in a couple of years we're going to have an NBA All-Star game, a Big Ten championship game in football, and an NCAA championship game in football, and we've hosted a Super Bowl. Like,
right. Well, and to pile on, like, we created a sports culture out of six at the time governing bodies, but Colorado Springs has 22, and they're not hosting these events. You know what I mean? Like, they're not creating an industry out of this. Like, they obviously were a natural choice for a lot of these governing bodies to go to, but we doubled down on the handful that we had and made it work.
Yeah, and what we did do was we played to our strengths.
Right.
We didn't say, hey, come put your training camps here.
Right.
Because we're not going to win that, and we can't fix that. We right. can't put a mountain in our backyard. Right. We can't
make it warm all year round.
Correct. We right. can't, you know, put a natural body of water somewhere. Like, right. We have what we have geographically. What we can do is we can say we have these tax advantages to moving here, a low cost of living for your employees, a really walkable downtown that we, you know, we've just built this up. We've just spent, you know, Unigov just happened. Come on down here. Check out what we're doing to downtown.
Right.
The restaurants are open after 5 now.
What?
Yeah. and we really started really focusing on what are our strengths and how can we improve this. And what we did over time was we said, all right, now, where can we put some venues? Where can we host some things? And as you'll see in some future episodes, we start to get some pretty big. The snowball, as you said, starts mm-hmm. to roll. You know, we talk the Pacers into moving downtown from the fairgrounds. We host a Final Four because we built this basketball stadium. Then we host a little bit bigger of a national event. Then we convince the city to build an extension to our convention center that just so happens to house a football team. And then, boom, Pan Am Games.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, we're an event city.
Right.
And we're a great convention.
At a national scale.
On a national scale.
Right.
And while sports were a driver of that, look at the other economic. I mean, we're one of the best convention cities in the country. That doesn't happen without the sports board, but I guarantee it.
Right.
As odd as that sounds, it doesn't happen without the sports
board. Yeah. No, yeah, for anyone hearing that, it's a weird jump to make that the sports corp made us a convention city. But yeah, when you go back and you dissect what actually happened, it's clear as day.
One thing that I always have thought it's funny, Sandy told us about this. And so then the Amateur Sports Act of 78 disbanding the AAU was obviously in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
We had already signed on to host like the AAU Sullivan Award dinner in 1979.
Oh, that's right.
Which is like the AAU's highest, it's the sports Oscars at the time. It's right. the amateur Oscars.
It's ESPYs.
Yeah, so yeah. We go from like the AAU's terrible, we're going to break up the AAU, and we still have to like salvage this event and be like, "No, but you should come check the event out."
Right.
Like, it's really important, like and we had to do that on really short notice. And it was just, I thought that was really interesting to have to still put that event together, even after, you know, they were kind of vilified for a while.
Right. Well, especially because typically, you know, award shows or award whatever presentations are like, let's celebrate all of our successes together. And it's like, ooh.
And the winner of that 1979 Sullivan Award was Kurt Thomas. an Indiana State Sycamore grad.
There you go.
He has, man, how many golds? Like, he has a bunch of gold medals. Well, he has a bunch of medals over, sure. You know, world championships, Olympic Games, things like that. There's a big, in the athletic department at Indiana State, there's a big picture of him holding, he was the flag bearer for one of the Olympic Games. And he's got, like, the swimming Heisman so many times. So we were able to give it to a guy in our backyard, which is right. Cool. But it's still, in my mind, I'd have to imagine that if I'm Sandy and I'm putting this event together, I'm like, well...
Right.
Like, I got to put a really pretty bow on this thing, and they're really not happy with us because not only did they get broken up, but we kind of like ate the scraps off the dinner table.
We vultured them.
So I, you know, that may not be interesting to anyone else. I just think that it was an interesting side piece. So,
And it might be too early for random facts, but I got to get this out too. Mm-hmm. So, since the Sports Corp formation in 1979, we have hosted more than 450 national and international sporting events, 17 Olympic trials, world championships in basketball, swimming, gymnastics, and rowing.
Keep going.
That's all. Where are you at?
I'm counting 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15.
All 17.
No, we hosted F. So obviously, I was way wrong about, like, we must have put on an awesome Sullivan Awards dinner because we hosted the next 15 after that. So, like, yes, the AAU didn't go away. It just went away as the governing body of all Olympic sports.
They still exist today.
Exist today. But it's just funny that. They had to have had a big black eye. I mean, obviously, we weren't around then, so we don't know how it was received.
Right.
But they had to have a big black eye after that. And so...
That's kind of like...
We hosted the dinner right after, and you would think that they could easily be like, look, screw you guys for taking... Right. Like, you should have been on our side. We're in your city.
Yeah.
But we still hosted it for 15 more years. So that right there says a lot about how good we are at hosting an event.
And especially award shows.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But, I mean, for a while there, early on... you know, we weren't hosting major events. We hosted a Final Four in 1980, which we'll talk about next episode. But that was before the Final Four was the Final Four. Like, we made the Final Four. We, us and Tom Jernstedt. Like, it wasn't March Madness. It was just another...
It was just March.
Yeah. I mean, kind of 79 really kicked it off with Bird and Johnson. And then we said, well, that one game was really cool. Why don't we make this whole Final Four an event? But then the very next year, like, we hosted the Sullivan Award and we hosted the Horizon League Cross Country Championship. So it's not like we got these and just boom, we were starting to take off and host a ton of awards. It was we brick by brick, if you will, mm-hmm. just start kind of building that temple. And eventually got to, you know, as things we'll talk about, you know, as we move forward. But I really think that the other thing that I think is important is if we really look through a lot of the major players in the Sports Corp and then what they've had their hands on or affected throughout the years. So we've talked about a few. Allison, obviously, she was the president of the Super Bowl host committee.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Swarbuck, he's the athletic director at Notre Dame. Ted Boehm, he was on the Indiana State Supreme Court. So, like, when you're looking at these people that were in charge of the Sports Corp, like, they didn't just use this as, like, a stepping stone in the career. They used this as a platform to make the city better and then go on when their time was up at the Sports Corp to go somewhere else to make the city better as well. And I think that that's really important. So from the beginning, we've had people running that company, well, that organization that really care, and they're doing it for the right reasons. They're not doing it for some sort of career advancement.
Right. Well, and again, like, that goes back to Sandy Knapp, like, her telling this story about her interview, like, mm-hmm. you know, she was, everyone in the room knew that it was going to be her, like, and she's nervous, like, she really wanted it because she really cared about this. I mean, everyone has that same mentality.
Yeah, and then I think I want to also play this other clip about her. When she got there, she was like, well, I don't know how to type.
Right, yeah, is that going to be a problem?
Yeah.
Then reality sets in because I'm like, well, I don't type. Am I going to be allowed to have a secretary, or how does that work? I mean, you know, he said, well, if you're going to need administrative support, then we'll have to hire somebody. And that's your first job. And I'm like, that's up to me. I'm supposed to, I mean, where's my office? And of course, we spent, I guess, maybe about the first 2 or 3 weeks just using a borrowed desk in the Chamber of Commerce office, to be honest. Tom King was the president at the time there. And so I ended up recruiting the administrative assistant who had been working for me at the Indiana Pacers, who was also not happy with the current ownership. So I hired her, and we started working on our first event, actually before we went on the payroll.
Yeah, I mean, if we want to jump the timeline a bit, the Sports Corp obviously initially set up to host these amateur sports events, but yeah, as we alluded to, I mean, the Sports Corp then has its hands in all these professional events. And I mean, actually, like 2 years ago, I did this 5K in the city that was hosted by the Sports Corp. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, everything. They just do everything.
Event now, like, if you haven't been to it, like, explain what it is. Like, you're talking about the one that goes through Lucas Oil and Bankers Life. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the Indy Ultimate. And yeah, it's basically like a tour of every sports facility in Indianapolis. You get to kick soccer balls, you know, you get to shoot the basket, kick a field goal. Actually, even on Georgia Street, the IMS set up like a tire changing station or something. Yeah, picker thing. You go through Military Park, you crawl under fake barbed wire, like. It's a really cool, like, sports themed event that's not over the top. Like, I mean, yeah, when was the last time you kicked a field goal at Lucas Oil?
Tuesday.
Oh, well,
I'm just kidding. Okay. Never.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, yeah. And I think that, and that's why we really wanted to tell that story about the Sports Corp. I know it starts weird, right? So we're sitting here talking about a runner from Oregon and how, you know, we had a bad showing in Olympics, and how does that fit in Indianapolis? Well, all those things kind of, like, you know, in a weird roundabout way, a runner from Oregon kind of really helped up put our city on the map, because if he doesn't start yelling and screaming about the AAU being terrible for athletes, you know, maybe we don't get 4 or 6 at the time sports, and maybe we don't build the Sports Corp, and maybe we're a completely different city.
Right.
So we really want to kind of lay that foundation. So next episode, we're going to talk, it's Pacers, you know, we're getting more into everybody's wheelhouse, some stuff that people have heard about, but we do have some interesting stories about the Pacers moving Market Square Arena, or building Market Square Arena, but moving the Pacers from the state fairgrounds.
I want to see how we moved it.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting.
Big crane. It was a large to-go bag for the hamburger.
That makes sense.
So we're going to talk about how the Pacers moved from the fairgrounds to downtown, building Market Square Arena, finding an owner for the Pacers, keeping them in Indy, and keeping them in Indy forever. We're going to discuss a little bit about how we started with events with the 1980 Final Four, and then we're going to move from there. And thanks for joining us on the journey. We want to give a giant thank you to Doug Carr and the DK New Media Studio for hosting us and allowing us to record here in the studio.
Please follow us at Hidden Indie Pod on Twitter or facebook.com/HiddenIndiePod.
And if you have any questions or want to reach out to us at all, hit us up on email. It's HiddenIndiePod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.